All right, welcome to episode 15 of the Obesity Panacea podcast, and I am joined once again by a special guest, so would you like to introduce yourself?
Hey everyone, I am Cy Curious from the blog Neurotic Physiology over at Scientopia, and I am quite thrilled to be here, like normal.
Awesome. So we're going to be talking about the post you did a couple weeks ago now that I think it was one of Peter's selections for research blogging. We put it up on our website on the weekend as kind of a notable post. So why don't you kind of review the post for everybody?
Well, thanks. I'm glad you liked it. So basically, I actually ended up titling my post, "Cure Your Aging Synapses with This New Diet and Exercise Regimen." Because you know how you get those ads online, and they're all like, "One tip for a flat belly," and "The thing moms know about whitening teeth." You know what I'm talking about.
Like, yes, absolutely.
And, you know, whitening teeth, blah. Who cares about that when you can cure your aging neuromuscular junctions? You know what I'm saying?
Excellent. Sounds good to me.
Yes. Okay, so it's been recognized for a long time. Well, not a long time. A long time in science world, like, you know, a decade, that extreme exercise and most particularly extreme caloric restriction, like 1,400 calories per day in a human, maybe 1,200, I think it's between 12 and 1,400 depending, but the severe caloric restriction and severe exercise can prevent aging in mice and rats, and people are actually starting to do these experiments in humans. I read about one a while ago that's actually ongoing. They don't know the results yet. But it's known that in mice you get really nice long-term changes in, you know, length of life. On the other hand, it's, you know, a really long life on, you know, 1,200 calories a day. So how great is that?
Right.
But it's a great mechanism in these animals for looking into how we age, what happens when we age, and what happens when you put people on these caloric restriction diets or make them exercise, and what changes about aging when you do that.
And sorry, just before you go on, have they done these things in other animals? Like, the caloric restriction kind of works in other animals as well, doesn't it? It's not just rodents, or is it just rodents that we know it definitely works in so far?
I would have to look that up, but off the top of my head, I know of studies in both rats and mice.
Okay.
I can look up for studies in monkeys, which would probably be the next step up, but I'm not actually sure.
Okay. That's fine.
So anyway, for this study, they chose to focus on the neuromuscular junction, and you will include a picture of the neuromuscular junction, yes?
Yes, absolutely.
Very pretty. So the neuromuscular junction is where a neuron imposes on a muscle, and this is important because, you know, you need neurons stimulating your muscles for things to actually move.
Right, okay.
And neuromuscular junctions work the way most synapses work. You get a release following a stimulus down the neuron. Get a release of neurotransmitter, little chemicals from little vesicles inside the neuron. They release into the space between the neuron and the muscle. The muscle gets activated by these neurotransmitters, and you get a signal which can result in either excitation, relaxation, multiple other things. So these synapses are pretty solid, and they stay pretty solid through time. Like, you know, the same synapse is going to remain from month to month.
Okay.
But what they found is that in these young adult mice versus older mice, and when they're looking at older mice, they're looking at old mice. These things are old, man. They're like 28, like, they're 2 years old, these mice.
And so that's really old for a mouse, is it?
That's ridiculous old.
Okay.
Yeah, like a mouse in the wild, like, makes it like a year.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But, you know, obviously they don't have that problem in the lab.
Right.
So they can live a lot longer. But it's a very old mouse. And what they did was they looked at slices of neuromuscular junctions. And one of the cool things about neuromuscular junctions is that you can see them really well. You can actually see them with a light microscope.
Right.
Which is awesome, and I wonder why no one let me look at them in college, because that would have been so cool and inspiring. So anyway, they took these young adult mice, they took aged mice, and they looked at the tibialis anterior muscle.
Okay.
Which is in your leg.
Yes.
Near the tibia. You probably know that.
Yes.
And these mice are actually not normal, they're special mice. They're mice that express YFP, which is yellow fluorescent protein, and they express that in all of their motor axons.
So all of their motor axons are bright yellow.
Bright yellow.
Is that normally or like under special light or something? Like you have to put it under black light or just all the time? You cut them open, you see all these little yellow dots in them.
You usually have to put them under special light, yeah.
Okay.
But actually, not necessarily. I think it's usually black light. But I do know they actually have had mice that express green fluorescent protein, and they're actually green.
Really?
Like parts of the mice glow green. It's kind of awesome, actually.
And this has no other like deleterious health effects. They're perfectly happy and healthy, other than the fact they glow yellow under black light.
Basically, I don't know if it's actually black light. I'd have to look the yellow fluorescent protein up. Oh yes, visualized. Let's see. Muscles were incubated. They had to incubate.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they had to incubate to express the yellow fluorescent protein. So it's there, but in order to visualize it, you have to incubate.
Okay, gotcha.
So they don't glow normally, but they do glow very nicely under the microscope, which is what's important. And it's all their motor axons, so every neuromuscular junction, you're going to be able to see the neuron side.
Okay.
So then they immunostained for acetylcholine receptors.
Okay.
And when, you know, look at acetylcholine receptors are located on the other side of the neuromuscular junction.
Right. Is that the main neurotransmitter in the muscle?
That's the main one. Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, there are other options, but that's the main one.
Okay.
And so basically when you get your a yellow fluorescent protein staining your axon yellow and your immunostaining for, say, acetylcholine receptors, staining your acetylcholine receptors red, you end up with this really nice McDonald's-looking mouse with, like, yellow on one side and red on the other.
Cool.
And it looks really pretty, as you can probably tell from the pictures, which I hope you will post.
Yes, yeah. So for everyone who's listening, if they want to follow along on the blog and look at the pictures, that'll probably make everything make a lot more sense.
So what they did was they took the tibialis anterior of the young adult and of the older mice, and they did immunostaining on both sides, and they just looked at the basal level of what the synapses looked like in these mice. And so in the first figure one, the top two panels that are nice and big, on the left you can see the young adult mouse. And
yes.
It's got this beautiful, beautiful, you know, arborization of the neurons, and it looks really nice. You've got all these really nice synapses. You can see they all line up. So all the yellow ends line up really nice with little red ends. But on the right, in the aged mice, the yellow ends do not line up so well with the red ends.
Yeah, it looks kind of faded and just sort of sloppy almost.
Yeah, and the fading is actually another issue. So basically what they found was that by examining these two slides, and many more like them, they found that older mice show, the older a mouse gets, you see increases in fragmenting of these synapses. So you see them start to fray, like to fade out like you saw. They kind of fray. You can see they're looking kind of wider.
Yeah.
Kind of like bigger and kind of like diffuse.
It looks kind of like split ends on hair or something. Like, it's just sort of...
Yeah, it just looks kind of meh.
Yeah.
And then you can see that the acetylcholine receptors actually get faint.
Yeah.
They didn't quantify whether there were fewer of them, but they get fainter. There's increases in sprouting in various areas, so they actually have more attempts at synapses. But they also have, like, a lot of the synapses don't exactly line up. Like, you get 40%. Of the synapse lining up, rather than 100%, like in the young mice.
So your nerves and muscles aren't really connecting anymore. It's like you got like a short, basically. Is that it? Like they're not connecting the way they should be.
Yeah, I mean they're still connected pretty well, but not half as well as in the young mice.
Right. Okay.
So they did this, and they looked at various features, including axonal swelling. They also saw really nice. You can see really nice in the right panel B in Figure 1.
Yeah.
You can see they saw thin axons.
Yeah.
You can see it there. It looks all hairy.
Yes.
Yeah, whereas in A, it looks like nice and thick and robust.
And sorry, is axonal swelling good or bad?
Axonal swelling is kind of, I guess, bad. It's a swollen varicosity, and it's, I think it's an attempt. I don't actually know the literature on this, but I'm fairly sure it's an attempt to make up for
more
synaptic area.
Okay, so it's like... Okay, so there's like collateral vessels around like a blocked vessel in the heart or something. It's like the body's way to try and fix a crappy situation.
Sort
sort of?
Not quite. I mean, I think a lot of things, they have axons that get really thin, but they have others that get really thick to try and make up for the two axon problems.
Okay.
Stuff like that. And they also saw that you get two axons that will converge on the same postsynaptic site. So that's kind of like one's got 40% and the other one's got the other 60%.
Okay.
So like as one, I guess, becomes disconnected, another one will try and take its place.
Okay.
You don't see that in young mice.
Gotcha.
You start to see it really significantly around the first year in mice.
And sorry, these changes with ages, because I couldn't really tell, because I always find basic science papers have, like, the method section is, like, three sentences, whereas for us it's, like, half the paper. But,
oh, no, their method section is half the paper, it's just all the supplemental methods.
Yeah, there's I don't know, I always take offense at that, because for us, like, you could never get away with that with people research, but, no, there's anything wrong with it, it's just different, I always find it jarring. But, so, were these aged mice, were they inactive their whole lives? Is this what happens to an inactive mouse? Or is this like a mouse living a perfect existence? This is still what happens.
Well, it's an average mouse. So it's a mouse. Have you ever seen mouse housing in a laboratory?
No.
Okay, so mouse housing. Frogs. Okay, well, mouse housing in a laboratory, a mouse has to have, by law, a specific amount of space, obviously, so that it's comfortable and not, you know, cramped.
Right.
So they have relatively large, I guess you could say it's the size of a large shoebox.
Gotcha.
The normal mouse cage size. And most people house, I would say, you can go up to 5 small mice in that cage.
Wow, thank goodness we have laws. What would we do to mice without laws? That sounds pretty intense as it is.
Oh, no, 5 is actually, mice like buddies. They're so
okay.
Like having their buddies around. A lonely mouse is a very bad thing.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
A mouse on its own, that's actually a way to create a depressive phenotype in mice.
Oh, all right.
Yeah. So, actually, you need a mouse with buddies. So, 5 is the maximum, but you can only do that with small mice. So, if the mice are, like, young, like, under 22 grams, kind of young mice.
Okay.
As they get older and bigger, they need more space, so you spread them out. But you always leave one with a buddy. So, probably by the time these guys were aged, they were probably housed maybe 2 to 3 to a cage. Maybe.
And do they have, like, a running wheel there where they can be active, or is it just kind of standing around all day and, like, wrestling with their buddies?
Yeah, no running wheel.
No running wheel, okay.
No running. So a normal mouse in a normal cage has a wire top which has all the food it ever wants in there. It has water, all the water it ever wants, and buddies, and that's it.
Okay. And so is that sort of, like, ecologically valid compared to the way it would be in the wild? Like, because I assume in the wild they do a lot of running, do they?
They do, yes. So
okay.
It's not the same. The mice do, they play a lot. You see them wrestling a lot.
Oh.
They also climb on the inside of the cage. I mean, they run around a good bit. So that's the one condition. And the exercise condition I'll talk to you about when we get to that point in the paper.
Okay.
So basically, these control mice are the ones fed whatever they want.
Okay.
Literally, it's all the mouse food you could ever want in your life. And then they put them on caloric restriction, where they restrict 40% of their diet.
Okay.
Okay. So in a human, that would be like dropping from 2,000 calories to 1,200 a day.
Right. So that's like what they do for people in pretty significant, like, medically supervised weight loss programs. So that's pretty big caloric restriction.
Yeah, it's pretty intense. And they started it at 4 months of age. So the animals are fully adult. A mouse is usually considered adult after 8 weeks, so after about 2 months.
Okay.
So they started when they were fully adult at, like, 4 months. And they did this from 4 to 24 months. So almost 2 years, these guys were calorically restricted to 1,200 calories a day.
Yeah.
Well, not the mice, but they were 40% calorically restricted.
Right, right.
So then they looked at the neuromuscular junctions, and you can see the photos in figure 3 are not as detailed as figure 1, but they give you a good idea of what's going on.
Yes.
They looked at the neuromuscular junctions in the regular mice who were given all they ever wanted to eat, and the mice that were caloric restricted. And what you can see is figures C through F on figure 3 are the bar graphs. And you can see that the far left of those bar graphs are the young mice. Okay.
Okay.
And they looked at 3 muscles in this case. They looked at the tibialis anterior, the gastrocnemius, and... one that I can't read because it's just
Gracilis, I think.
Gracilis.
Yeah.
So they looked at all three of these, and you can see in the young mice, there's like no signs of synapse fragmentation. There's no faint acetylcholine. The acetylcholine receptor is very strong. There's no denervation. There's a decrease in sprouting. In the older mice that are not calorically restricted, that have whatever they want to eat, you see major increases in these problems, indicating problem synapses, okay, that are worn out and old.
Yeah.
But in the caloric restricted ones, you see a drastic decrease. The decrease here is very drastic.
And yeah, it looks like they don't, I don't see if they show it here, but it looks like the old that are calorically restricted are barely, like, are they even significantly greater than the young?
That's not compared, but it would surprise, I would say the acetylcholine receptors, it looks like some of them are not significant. The denervated looks maybe it's not. I'd have to see the statistics myself.
Right.
But it's certainly, I mean, what you're interested in is the decrease from the regular control
right.
mice.
So basically, the young are working really, really well. The old that are given as much food as they want are not working very well, and the old that are calorically restricted are working a little less well than they were when they were young, but still really, really well compared
yeah.
to their peers that are given as much food as they want.
Yeah. I mean, I'd love to see this compared to mice as they age, like to see, like do these mice that are 24 months old, I mean, how do they look compared to, like, 18-month-old mice, 12-month-old mice?
Yeah.
You know, how old do these mice really look?
Right,
you know,
yeah.
Do you look 30?
Yes. That would be a sexy title.
Yeah. But, yeah, so that's how they did with the caloric restriction, and that looked really good. So they then gave them exercise. And in this case, they didn't restrict them. They put a wheel in the cage.
Okay. So that's all they did. They just pop a wheel in there. The mice do the rest.
Wheel. Yeah. Mice love to run. They love it.
Don't we all?
Yeah. I know you and I do. They run about 4 kilometers per day when given whatever they want to do. And the 4 kilometers per day for Americans out there is 2.9 miles? Maybe it's 2.4 miles. 2.4 miles.
Yeah,
so,
that's right.
That's a mouse running 2.4 miles a day.
Yeah, it's pretty far. That's more than most people I know. Yeah.
I don't know how that would translate to a human, but it's a really good distance for
yeah.
a mouse. And, you know, so I'm not sure how well that particularly compares to the human condition, because humans just, in general, I mean, you'd have to be an ultramarathoner to run that much.
Right.
You know, we just don't, we're lazy. And, of course, there are differences in metabolism. There's, you know, lots of differences here inherent between mice and humans. But still, they gave them the running wheels for a month, from 22 to 23 months old. And so what you can see here in figure 4 is, yet again, we have the pictures of the synapses, and we have the bar graphs. And you can see that the young mice look the same. The old control mice look the same. The exercise mice, they look good. I mean, they don't look as good as the caloric restriction mice. They look all right.
And especially considering it's 1 month versus the caloric restriction was 2 years or something, so
yeah.
Not bad for 1 month.
Yeah, I actually consider that to be one of the biggest
yeah, it's strange.
In the study, that they did not... Well, when you look at papers like this, I mean, a lot of neuroscience papers like this that you'll see in PNAS, you know... Sometimes you'll get someone, a reviewer, saying, well, what about exercise? And then PNAS says, well, yeah, you better get exercise in there.
Oh, so it's sort of an add-on. You can go back and do one, like, a couple months
yeah.
of work, and, oh, okay.
Yeah, so that might be the reason that they went with a really short period of exercise here. There might have been other reasons. They may have thought that exercise may have had a stronger effect.
Right.
But it would be really nice to see a time course response curve for the effects of, like, long-term exercise, and also to see if you could get away with less exercise if you do it for longer.
Right.
Because I know most humans, when confronted with this data, are going, okay, but I'm not going to run marathons.
No, exactly.
Yeah. So, which can you blame? But you can see it looks pretty good. And finally, they actually looked, and I thought this was a particularly good thing to look at. They looked at the effects of caloric restriction and exercise in various muscles that are not being exercised, because the thigh, I think it's the thigh muscle that we're looking at, the tibial, the tibial center.
Yeah, so the lower leg muscles.
Okay, lower leg. So lower leg muscles, I mean, obviously these mice are running, so they're exercising those specifically. and that's not, you know, I mean, they're exercising them specifically. So they want to see, well, how does caloric restriction affect muscles and exercise affect muscles that are not specifically being exercised?
Right.
Caloric restriction affects all the muscle cells equally, obviously, and all the neurons equally, because it's all over the body. They did see, however, in the older mice that got exercise, that the main effects were only in the muscles that were exercised.
Okay, which makes sense.
Yeah, and then that does make sense. It's a little disappointing. you know, you can't just, like, run or bike or something.
Right.
You really gotta do Pilates and, you know, weightlifting and, I don't know, really get a full body workout. And that's still not going to help, you know, like, various other muscles that you just can't exercise.
Right.
So, caloric restriction appears to be by far the biggest effect.
And, sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Well, I was wondering, so, and maybe I'm jumping ahead a bit here, but what's the take-home message in terms of how does this matter? Like, does this possibly explain the benefits of caloric restriction on extending life, or why do your synapses and your neuromuscular junctions matter to your health?
Well, your neuromuscular junctions matter to your health because they matter to your movement. And your muscles control movement in a lot of areas other than your legs. We're talking breathing. We're talking, you know, various blood vessels, things like that. You've got muscle in all those areas. You've got neuromuscular junctions in all those areas.
Okay.
So it's pretty global. Now, I'm not going to say, it's obviously not all types of aging. This is a very, very specific kind of aging. And they did not really talk about how this might, it provides a lot of interesting insight into how your neuromuscular junctions age. They didn't really talk about how this might help with specific diseases associated with aging.
Right. And so, I mean, the one that jumps out to me is sarcopenia, which is an age-related sort of deterioration of your muscle. That seems like one that makes a lot of sense for.
Yes, and they did mention that one, I think, in the
chat. Yes, they did, yeah.
So certainly in that case, exercise can probably help a good bit. I appear to be missing this last half of my discussion. Oh no, there it is. So certainly that can help with those kind of problems, but it's not gonna like take the wrinkles off your face. Is what
right.
It probably won't help Alzheimer's. You know.
Well, that's what I was wondering. If caloric restriction is systemic in its effects on neuromuscular junction, would you expect it to be, you know, systemic in its effects on other synapses?
I don't know. We'd have to look in the other synapses. I mean, you could hypothesize that it might indeed be the same, but there are different regulations of various receptors. So, for instance, you've got faint acetylcholine receptors. There's different regulations. There's different forms of cellular regulation for various aspects of synapses. And perhaps these are differentially regulated in different tissues.
Okay.
So you can't necessarily say, I mean, you can certainly hypothesize, and if I were them, I'd be looking.
Right, that makes sense. Okay.
Yeah, but I wouldn't, like, definitely say, oh, yes, all the neurons in the brain age this way, because I can't say that. I don't know that.
And do you know, like, what are the mechanisms? Because whenever I see these caloric restriction studies, I see things like, you know, it might reduce free radicals or things, but it seems like people don't entirely know what's going on. Like, do you know what's happening here, or what's likely happening here?
I don't. They did see with exercise their final experiment, which is, in my opinion, pretty sweet. They did time lapse imaging.
Yes.
Which is like so badass. I mean, that's really cool. Okay. So it was really awesome. And what they did was they actually exposed the muscle, and then they actually did time-lapse imaging on these animals as they were exercising. Yes. And so they labeled the acetylcholine receptors, imaged them, put the mice in, back in, gave them running wheels, and then checked them out later. So they actually managed time-lapse imaging in the same mice, and that's really cool.
Yeah, because that's one of the things that it's always disappointing with about mouse studies is that you don't see the same mouse at different time points. You see mice that are killed at 6 months and mice that are killed at 12 months and 18 months typically, right? Like it's... Yeah.
Well, there are certainly exceptions. There are certainly exceptions where you can have the mouse or rat that extends throughout the study. But when you're giving specific drugs, for example,
right.
You don't want the compound effects of the drug, like, you know, confounding your data. Like, you don't want the drug to, like, build up or the effects of the drug to build up over time. When you're looking at specific time points, that's often not what you want.
Right, that makes sense.
Yeah. So it's kind of understandable in those circumstances. So, yeah, they did this really cool time-lapse imaging, and what they found was that when you take these older mice, when you first expose the muscle and image it, you see mice that look like normal old mice. And then when you let them exercise, the exercising reverses the aging changes. The mice, the neuromuscular junctions get younger. And not in all ways, but in some of them.
And so meaning what exactly? I'm looking at this, so figure 7 here.
Mm-hmm.
So what gets improved by exercise?
It looks like you see an increase in you see reductions in fragmentation. So you saw fragmentation in the older ones, and they had a high degree of fragmentation. Like the synapses were all fragmented and wookie looking.
Yeah.
You see less of that. The synapses actually become more coalesced.
Really?
Yeah. You see. Increases, you know how you saw that faint acetylcholine receptors getting all, like, faint? They get thicker. It doesn't appear, you see changes in fragmentation, and you see increases in acetylcholine receptors. I don't think they looked at the other parts of neural aging, of the neuromuscular junction aging in this particular experiment, but you certainly see certain aspects of aging literally get reversed.
When you stimulate a circuit, it tends to get stronger. Is that true, like with neurons in general?
Mm.
No?
Yes. I mean, with drug abuse, for example, we talk about things like tolerance. That's different. But in this case, it looks like with exercise and these neuromuscular junctions, it kind of looks like use it or lose it.
And, that's a good one. I like that. But also, when you calorically restrict mice, they increase their physical activity, like, spontaneously on their own. You just restrict them, and suddenly they get more active, right?
That is a confound, yes. Actually, that goes not just for mice. Many people with anorexia who are severely calorically restricted actually also show hyperactivity. It's a side effect of caloric restriction. So certainly they could be having this long-term effect, which is why I think it's very important that they go back and give these mice running wheels from the 4-month time point, like they gave the caloric restriction, because
right.
That way you can kind of tease out a little bit the increase in activity from the caloric restriction.
Right. So it seems like caloric restriction in this is really strong, but it may also, part of its strength may be the fact that when you calorically restrict these animals, they get way more exercise as a side benefit.
Yes, it could be a combination effect. And I mean, it'd be really nice to see, you know, what happens when you give these, you know, young adult mice long term exercise. What happens with various degrees of exercise?
Right.
Threshold. You know, it'd be very interesting to see. Also, is there a threshold for caloric restriction? Does it have to be 40%? I mean, that's
right.
The one that shows the dramatic increase in lifespan. But what if it's, you know, 20%? Do you get anything
okay. there? So do you like a dose response to see what's the minimum you can do to sort of get a benefit?
Yeah, I'm a pharmacologist. I think in dose response first.
Okay.
Yeah.
And because I'm just interested in this, like, exercise versus caloric restriction, because I find the caloric restriction thing so interesting, and you said that so individuals with anorexia nervosa actually show increased physical activity?
Some of them do. They show hyperactive. They move more. Now, on the other hand, is that because they're moving more, or is that because people with anorexia also overexercise?
Well, that's what I was wondering, because typically in humans, when you want someone to lose weight, typically one of the behavioral compensations is that they burn less calories once they lose weight, that their body adapts, and whether it's through, you know, less fidgeting or less exercise, it's sort of a well-known thing that drop 10 pounds, you're going to start burning less calories. And so
right.
I just find it sort of counterintuitive that you calorically restrict a mouse and suddenly they become more active.
Yeah, it's actually kind of counterintuitive to me too. I don't really know the mechanism behind that. So, I mean, you'd have to ask someone who either knows more than me or see if there's anything in the literature on that subject.
Right.
It would be very interesting to see. I'm very interested in the combination of caloric restriction and exercise, like what kind of combined effect that has, the effects of exercise alone, whether or not maybe you can, like, go down by, like, 10% of your calories and work out, like, 5 times a week and still get the anti-aging effect. You know,
right.
Where do these two come together?
Well, and what else interests me, because my area of research specifically is sedentary behavior, so not necessarily the impact of exercise, but the impact of sitting versus the impact of standing.
Right.
And so I'm kind of interested in because one of the things about sitting is that suddenly all your postural muscles are no longer being activated, and that has important effects that are different from simply not getting enough exercise. Like when you're standing, your postural muscles are activated, and it seems like that sort of keeps certain metabolic processes going in the muscles that can keep you quite a bit healthier than sitting, which is strange.
Is that a postural effect, or is that like, I mean, standing, would you have better blood flow to certain areas? I mean, are there other possible mechanisms there?
There are other possible, but blood flow, it doesn't really do a whole lot in terms of, like, blood sugar and things like that. Like it wouldn't be the most likely thing. It seems to be there are real effects in muscle, like whether it's glucose transporters or like protein lipase levels that are very sensitive to inactivity.
Hmm.
And so that's what I'm studying, but in people. But I'm curious about it because I look at this and I know that these mice that are aging are still moving a bit, so they're not sedentary per se, but it's still interesting if, you know, like you were saying, the dose response, if simply keeping them active at a very low level, like not necessarily wheel running, but just kind of walking around slowly, if that's enough to maintain some of the youngness in their synapses or the neuromuscular junctions, or if it has to be, you know, structured exercise really given or on the wheel.
Yeah, I don't actually know. I mean, for one thing, it's very hard to get a low activity mouse.
Right.
That's going to be a big issue. You don't get a lot of those. I mean, if anything, you get really high activity.
Right.
There are some models of low activity, but they're often knockout mice, which have major issues of their own.
Right.
I think, it occurs to me, I was looking at this paper when I first wrote the blog post on it, and, you know, I really wonder why they don't just do this in humans. I mean, it would be hard because you can't get a YFP expressing human.
Right.
But you could certainly immunostain for stuff on both sides of the neuromuscular junction. Do a muscle biopsy.
But a muscle biopsy that catches part of the nerve, isn't that? I've heard that's pretty unpleasant and has some negative long-term side effects, doesn't it?
Oh, see, I don't know that. I don't work in humans.
Explain
why people wouldn't volunteer.
I've never had a biopsy, but I know I've had friends that have had a lot, and I've heard them say that that's sort of one of the risks, is that if it hits a nerve, it can kind of mess up your muscle function for good, from what I understand.
Well, they could certainly try. I mean, they could certainly look at controls, for example, cadavers. I mean, you'd have to be really, really careful about, you know, I don't know if they could actually get really good staining in cadavers, but you could certainly look.
That's true.
And, you know, cadavers, if you hit a nerve, they can't complain. So, you know, you could look at, I mean, especially with people in the U.S., I know we have an obesity epidemic, but there are people becoming more active. You get these older guys who are marathoners well into their 70s.
Right, right.
And, you know, you might be able to get some people who would be able to fulfill your criteria.
Right.
So who knows, maybe they're headed that direction, maybe another lab is, it's hard to tell. But it'd be a cool thing to look at, see if you get this in humans.
Yeah, no, for sure. And the caloric restriction, like, it's a very sexy topic. Like, you hear a lot of people talking about it. I personally am really skeptical in humans, just because, I mean, if someone was controlling every aspect of your life, caloric restriction would work well, but in a free living person, it's just impossible for that to work for 99% of people over the long term.
I'm mostly skeptical because, I mean, sure, it may be a longer life, but is it really worth living?
Well, absolutely, yes. And as you know, in your post, you need your Pop-Tarts, and I'm the same way. If it comes down to eating less or exercising more, I always err on the side of exercising more personally.
Yeah. And, well, I mean, the good thing is, you know, it looks like there's some good indication. You know, as you get older, you may be able to heal your synapses.
That's very cool. Well, I think. Well, why don't we leave it there, Si? That was excellent.
Okay, so, great. Thanks so much for having me on.
Well, no, it's always great to have you. Was there anything else, actually, before I let you go, that you wanted to say about this study? Anything that we didn't touch on that you thought was cool, or is that that pretty much it?
No, that's basically it. But if anyone listens to this podcast and if I say anything wrong, please yell at me. Si, you suck. You did this wrong. Who gave you your PhD? Dear God, take it away. But yes, so please, if anybody sees anything that I described inaccurately or needs me to clarify, let me know, and we'll play with it.
Excellent. And same goes for me, because this is not my area of expertise either. So awesome. Well, thanks a lot, Si, and have yourself a great night.
Thanks so much. You too.
All right, take care.